Ecclesiastes chapter 3, please turn there in your Bibles with me. Ecclesiastes chapter 3. Originally, I was going to preach 1 through 8 this morning, and then Brian was going to preach 9 through 15 on Wednesday night, but as I began studying this text, I realized that this is basically one unit, and it would be best if I do it in a two-part series. And so today and Wednesday, we will be looking at verses 1 through 15 of Ecclesiastes chapter 3. I'm going to set the text before us. This is a message that I have entitled, Everything Has an Appointed Time. Chapter 3, verse 1, there is an appointed time for everything. And there is a time for every event under heaven, a time to give birth and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to uproot what is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to throw stones and a time to gather stones. A time to embrace and a time to shun embracing. A time to search and a time to give up as lost. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear down and a time to sew together. A time to be silent and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. What profit is there to the worker from that in which he toils? I have seen the task which God has given the sons of man with which to occupy themselves. He has made everything appropriate in its time. He has also set eternity in their heart, yet so that man will not find out the work which God has done from the beginning even to the end. I know that there is nothing better for them than to rejoice and to do good in one's lifetime. Moreover, that every man who eats and drinks sees good in all his labor. It is the gift of God. I know that everything God does will remain forever, and there is nothing to add to it, and there is nothing to take from it, for God has so worked that men should fear him. That which is has been already, and that which will be has already been, for God seeks what has passed by. 1 week ago, today, the news broke concerning the death of Kobe Bryant and his daughter Gianna. And even if you're not a basketball fan or a sports fan, I am sure that you have seen in the headlines, you have heard people talking about the fact that Kobe Bryant has passed on from this life. One of the greatest basketball players in the history of the game. Removed just 4 years from retirement, died in a helicopter crash in an instant, in a moment, as it seems that helicopter was caught in different fog and came down and crashed into the side of a mountain near Calabasas, California. Shocking news. Celebrity deaths typically don't affect me because it's not a world that I find myself in or care much about. But this one rocked me a little bit. This is a guy who gave himself to the game of basketball for 20 years and played the game right. And then from all looks that we can see, was a family man, loved his wife and his girls. 41 years old. In an instant, headed to his daughter's basketball game to coach her in a tournament. Died. Gone. Instantaneously. And the pain now that his wife and three girls who are left must have is excruciating. It is something that most of us probably cannot wrap our minds around or understand. To lose a husband, a father, and a daughter in one instant Your life is changed forever. And the other families of the other victims who were in that helicopter crash, instantaneously, their lives were changed. It is events like these that highlight the thrust of these verses that we just read. That there is an appointed time for everything that occurs in human history. Listen to verse 1 again. There is an appointed time for everything. And there is a time for every event under the sun. That is to say, under God's sovereign timetable, time is fixed. He has established the bounds of time and how life operates within those bounds. However, within his absolute sovereignty, God has seen fit to create human beings who have the capacity to live lives and to make volitional or willful choices. This certainly cannot mean that human beings have an absolute free will, because that would mean people have sovereign authority over God. And we affirm with the scriptures that it is God alone who has absolute sovereign power over all things. But human beings are free to operate according to their natural bent. We are born sinners. Therefore, we sin. We are sinful. We are self-serving. And all of our choices move along according to that bent. And we make all kinds of free choices within that realm. This is why it takes a work of God to change the bent of an individual to love God and to love the things of God. This is the power of regeneration, of God taking out the heart of stone and placing in the heart of flesh, igniting the soul to love Christ, bringing about instantaneous faith and repentance, so that those who come to faith in Jesus Christ now have a new nature. They are bent towards the things of God. And they can then operate and make decisions within that realm. But nonetheless, they are not free ultimately. They cannot be. God is the only one who is sovereign. And within that freedom that we have according to our bents, lives are lived. All kinds of things in life happen, and all of it takes place within the context of being in a fallen world that God is still sovereignly in charge of. And part of that sovereign plan includes people making decisions about life while they exist on this earth. Hence, our text this morning. And God is sovereign over every aspect of this universe, including every individual, every element of nature, and every situation. God has established an appointed time for all things according to his predetermined plan, which he is working out for his glory. You say to me, yes, Brandon, we know that. You and every other pastor on this campus reminds us of this regularly. What is your point? And more importantly, what is Solomon's point that actually has bearing on my life from this text? Well, the answer to that question is what I want to focus on during our time together today and Wednesday. Here's the point. Truly enjoying life requires you to relinquish any notion of sovereign independence and entrusting yourself to the ordained plan of a perfectly sovereign God. Truly enjoying life requires you to relinquish any notion of sovereign independence and entrusting yourself to the ordained plan of a perfectly sovereign God. You see, one of the biggest problems in this life that manifests itself in all kinds of different scenarios is specifically related to the fact that we desire to control our own destiny and be sovereignly in control of our own lives. We desire to be ultimately free. We desire to put our ship on its course and then to be the one who navigates that ship. We want every decision we make to be according to our plan. We want to operate according to our desires, according to what we want out of this life, according to what we see fit as best. And we even do this as Christians. We lay out a plan for our life, a plan that looks great, a plan that has everything in place, so to speak. And we start down the path of life thinking, God is on my side, I am his child, I'm going to be able to accomplish everything I want, I'm going to be able to conquer the world, so to speak. And our life takes a turn that we weren't expecting, and all of a sudden our rug is ripped out from underneath us, and we have no idea what's happening. And all of a sudden we're like, Lord, Lord, this wasn't the plan. You know my plan was good. My plan was for this. You know that. Why in the world would you bring something like this into my life? And we get frustrated. Right? We get angry. We don't like difficulty. We don't like to struggle. We don't like to fight. And so when we live with that perspective that I am the one who is guiding my life, I am the one who is ultimately the one who should be making the decisions of my life, when we live with that perspective, life is frustrating and difficult and at times even seemingly hopeless. Verse 3 tells us that there is a time for every event under heaven. Under heaven. This phrase, under heaven, is important because it implies to us that all the events listed in the following verses happen under God's sovereign control. Throughout the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon regularly uses the phrase under the sun. But this phrase, under heaven, he uses just 3 times, I believe. And it's very specific to talk about the fact that what he's about to say, he wants us to see it from God's perspective. He wants us to see it from the fact that God is sovereign over these situations, that God is in control of this. And so he says there in chapter 3, verse 1, that every event, there's a time for every event under heaven. And in order to communicate this reality that we are to enjoy life by living under the sovereign plan of God, Solomon uses 4 avenues to do this. 2 that we will look at this morning, 2 that we will look at Wednesday. 4 avenues. And the first avenue is found in verses 2-8, and we can label it as, number 1, a descriptive poem. A descriptive poem. In verses 2-8 that I just read, Solomon uses 14 sets of what are called merisms in the poetry world. Now, if you are a poet, and hopefully you know it, then you might know what a merism is. I had no idea what a merism was. Now I know. But a merism is a figure of speech which employs polar opposites for the purpose of encompassing everything in between. That is to say that the polar opposite aspects of life, so the birth, death, planting, harvesting, killing, healing, all of those things are opposites, and they are used by Solomon in verses 2-8 for the purpose of encompassing all of life on this planet. That is his purpose. This poem here in these verses describes for us the reality of life in a fallen world. Now, this poem is not to be taken as a prescription, but rather it is to be taken as pronouncements as to how life occurs on this planet. God is saying through the pen of Solomon, this is what life consists of. This is what happens in life. This is a regular part of every person's life on this planet. As you look at these verses, it is difficult to group them, as Solomon's overall point is to use them to encompass life. However, I think you can break them down into a few categories, which will be helpful for us to understand them better. And again, these categories are by no means inspired. They're just categories that I used as I was looking at this text to help put it into some sort of thing that I could understand. And so we're going to look at these in categories. And we see here that all time operates according to God's creative plan in these verses. So note, first of all, that God is sovereign over life and death. God is sovereign over life and death. Look at verse 2. Solomon says, "There is a time to give birth and a time to die." It is this first set of merisms that serves to communicate the overall scope of God's sovereignty in regard to life on this planet. This is a summary statement, so to speak. Everything he's going to speak of after these verses, it feeds back into this summary statement of verse 2. God is sovereign over life and death. That every person who has been born or who will ever be born has been appointed that specific time of birth by a sovereign God. Now, this includes the difficult births and the crazy births. I've heard all kinds of stories about birth. You have ladies who've been in labor for 72 plus hours. You have ladies who think that they are going to have a nice stay in the hospital and give birth to a child, and it's going to be all fun and games. And guess what? It's not. Not that fun. On at least one occasion when my wife was having a child, we were in there, and I was probably more nervous than she was, and it was probably harder on me than it was on her. But I'm standing there by the bed, and you know, things are starting to happen where the baby's going to start to come out, all these different things. And there's a lady in the room next door, and life's not going well for her. This is not a fun experience for her. And there is screaming like you would not believe what was going on in that bedroom, in that hospital room. Difficult births. Difficult things that happen, crazy times. I had a buddy, close friend in seminary. He was in class. It was 2:00 in the afternoon, I believe. He was up in class. He got a call. He left class. And he had to go down 3 flights of stairs, which going quickly would take 10 to 20 seconds. So he gathered his books. He went out, down the stairs, got to his car, and his daughter called and said, "Baby's here." Like 2 minutes. 2 minutes from the first call to the second call. Baby was there, and she delivered it, and she was 12. That's wild. I don't think I would wish that upon any 12-year-old. God is sovereign over the exact appointed time of every single person's birth on this planet. The moment that baby is born is the exact appointed time that God had established before the foundation of the world. Turn over to Psalm 139 for just a moment, a psalm you probably know somewhat well. I just want to read a few verses out of Psalm 139. Expresses this point in a very, very clear way. Verse 13 of Psalm 139. "For you formed my inward parts. You wove me in my mother's womb. I will give thanks to you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, and my soul knows it very well. For what does a man get in all his labor and in his striving with which he labors under the sun?" I flipped to the wrong page. There it is. "My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the depths of the earth. Your eyes have seen my unformed substance, and in your book were all written the days that were ordained for me, when as yet there was not one of them." This is why all of life is precious. This is why all of life is a gift from God, because it has been specifically appointed by God. But not only is God sovereign over life, over birth, he is also sovereign over death. We know from Romans chapter 6, verse 23, that the wages of sin is death. We know that sin entered the world through Adam and Eve in Genesis chapter 3, and that because of that, every person is condemned to death. Death is here because of the curse of sin. In Acts 17, Paul is addressing men in Athens on Mars Hill, where there was an altar to an unknown God, giving them clarification that God is known and has revealed himself. And Paul says this in these verses. In verse 24, he says, "The God who made the world and all the things in it, since he is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands, nor is he served by human hands as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all people life and breath and all things. And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined their appointed times and the boundaries of their habitation." God has determined the appointed time of every person's birth, and God has determined the appointed time of every person's death. In Hebrews 9:27, it says, "It is appointed for man to die once, and after that comes judgment." All of life is under the sovereign control of God and exists for his purposes. And it is a gift to us from him. And so as you reflect on that all-encompassing statement, that there is a time to be born and there is a time to die, that all of life exists under this premise, that all of life exists under the sovereignty of God. Therefore, we are not to worry or to stew over the length of our life, or when it might come to an end. But rather, we are to enjoy the time he has given us now. Every moment you breathe has been appointed to you by the hand of a sovereign, gracious God. And so, this is how people who deal with all kinds of struggles and issues in their life, even facing imminent death at times because of disease or something like that, this is how they can still live in a state of rejoicing all the time, because they know that every single moment of their life is a gift that has been appointed to them by the hand of a sovereign good God. Solomon goes on, and he focuses more on the inner workings of life to add more color to this poem. Look at the second half of verse 2 and verse 3 and note, secondly, that God is sovereign over all human activities. God is sovereign over all human activities. Second part of verse 2 says, "There is a time to plant and a time to uproot what is planted." There is a proper time that planting takes place for crops to grow. There's a proper time that harvesting takes place for crops to be cut and put into silos or taken to grain elevators. I know this because I was in Kansas before I came here. And my life revolved around the world of planting and harvesting. Our church schedule operated on the basis of planting and harvesting. I had never seen anything like it in all of my life. My summer was 5 months long. It was awesome. 5 months. Because there would be this huge break where there was this work going on in the fields that there was not time for church in the middle of the week. It was very interesting. But there was an exact time to plant and there was an exact time to harvest. I knew that by the end of March, early April, that they would be getting out their planters. Which, if you're like me, before you move to Kansas, you think this guy who's got a hoe, and he's going out there, and he's just going to start digging little holes, right? Dropping in seed out of his pouch. Guess what? We've come a long way since then. So I got into a tractor with this guy, and he was going to show me how to do it. And it was this huge field, and I was thinking, this is a long time to be in this small space with this guy. And that boy got in there, and we started going, and we're down at one end. That entire field was planted. It was like, whoa. I mean, those people back in the olden days, they are rolling over their graves right now thinking, this is ridiculous. But it was that time to plant, and that seed was put in, the fertilizer was put in. And then over the course of the summer, there would be, in the spring, there would be rains and there would be sun. And then come about October, it was harvesting time. And so the combines would get out into those fields. And again, I was riding in a combine with a guy, very small space, just not my thing, very small space. And we went out and we were driving for a long time, because there was a lot of fields he had to cut down, and they would be taken to trucks, and trucks would be taken to the grain elevators, and they would be sold, and they would make their money. The same time every year. There is a time to plant, and there is a time to harvest. There is also a time to kill. There in verse 3. Now, there is some debate what is meant here, but it is likely referring to times when the act of killing is appropriate. Times of war, the death penalty, justly executing those who have murdered others. Genesis 9 tells us that God tells Noah that those who take innocent life, their lives need to be taken from them. This probably is in reference to that in some way. That there is a time to kill, that when it's appropriate and it happens in life, that wars happen, deaths happen. There's also a time to heal, a time to mend what is broken, to sow, to literally heal a wound. This verse, this word means to heal. Friends, there are times to go to the doctor. And if you're like me, you don't like to go to the doctor, ever. But there are times to prevent illness. Sometimes we get in our minds that because God is sovereign, He's sovereign over life and death, that I don't have to use the means that God has given me on this planet to stay alive. That's just not how it works. God has given us doctors, and He's given us technology, and He's given us the ability to fight disease. Guess what? We should all take advantage of that. It's a good thing. It's a good thing if you have some sort of infection to go get medicine for that infection. There is indeed a time to heal. And there are some crazy sects of people within, under the realm of Christianity, which they're not really Christians, who refuse to go to the doctor ever. And then large groups of them die at one time because they get something, some sort of infection that comes in amongst their group, and then they don't want to go fight it, and they think God's going to heal me, and they're dead. There is a time to heal. You've got to take care of yourself with the means that have been provided through medicine and doctors. That's a good thing. The text goes on to say there is a time to tear down walls and structures, and there is a time to build them up. And we see that going on constantly around us. It's just a realm of life, an aspect of life. And though we make decisions concerning all of these types of actions in our lives, all of the work that we do, all of the things that our hands set forth to do, as Solomon will talk about later in the book of Ecclesiastes, we set our hands to do all of these different things, we must live with the perspective that God is in charge and that we are to submit to Him. That yes, you can sum up life into all these verses, and it pretty much touches us in some way in our lives. We can resonate with this in some way because it encapsulates all of life, but all of these things that we go through, all of these decisions we make, the mundane issues of life that we have to deal with Monday through Friday on a regular basis and Saturday and Sunday, all of these things, we need to understand that God is in charge and we must submit to Him. Therefore, as Colossians tells us, we do all of these things to the glory of God. We don't live for these things, though. We don't live for these things. We don't worry about these things. We participate in these things that God has given us in this life, knowing that our joy in doing them comes only from God. You see what happens is that we begin to live for these things. We begin to revolve our lives completely and totally around the planting and the harvesting. We begin to worry about wars and all of those kinds of things. All of these things we are to do, we are to participate in, because this is what life involves, but we are not to live for them and we are not to worry about them. We are to participate in them, knowing that our joy in doing them comes only from God. Third, I want you to note that God is sovereign over all human emotions. God is sovereign over all human emotions. Verse 4 says, there is a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance. In God's providence, life in a fallen world comes with a slew of emotions. Emotions that God created to be manifested at certain times in everyone's life. Typically, you don't see a lot of cheering and shouting and uncontrollable laughter at a funeral. Typically. Sometimes I fall outside of that realm of typical. You have met my brothers, but you don't know them well. We are all kind of one and the same person. And we happen to be at a funeral of a relative, a great-grandfather. We didn't know him well, but we were there. We were a little bit younger. I actually think I was probably married. Was I married? I was married. This is unfortunate. I was married. But I was married when I was really young, so I was really young. So he dies, and we go to the funeral. All my family's there, a lot of them are grieving and different things, and, you know, I didn't know him that well. And so, you know, we're just glad to be hanging out together, me and my siblings, and having a good time. And here comes one of my cousins up to the front of the funeral. And she says, I'm going to sing a song that was my grandfather's favorite song. And the name of that song, ready for this, you ready for this, is I'm Just a Woman. And I'm down already, and I look up, and I think, what? What's she about to sing? My brothers and I look at each other, and the bench starts to shake uncontrollably. And for the remainder of that entire funeral, I have no idea what happened. The entire rest of that funeral, we laughed and cried, but the tears weren't tears of mourning. They were tears of hysterical laughing that we could not get control over, just shaking back and forth. And then my parents looked over, and my parents even started to laugh because they're watching us just interact. And it's like, this should not be happening here. This is a bad situation. But listen, I'm just a woman. I mean, that I can't believe nobody else was. I was blown away. I thought clearly people missed, but then you hear the song and you think, am I the only one who hears this? Nonetheless, as I said, once in a while, I'm not typical. But typically at a funeral, you weep and mourn. You grieve the loss of that life that is there in that casket. You weep and you mourn at bad news you receive from someone, or maybe you get a bad call from the doctor, or your friend does, or your parents do, or whoever it is. Solomon says that there's a time at that moment to mourn, to weep. There are times to do that. It is okay. You laugh and you rejoice and you dance at weddings, at celebrations that you participate in life. You enjoy the relationships that God has given you. Friendships, marriages, family relationships. You enjoy all of those things. All of that is right and good. All of that is a part of life, Solomon tells us. And in the context of all the different relationships you have in this life, you experience and manifest all of these different emotions. Understand that these emotions have been ordained by God and given as a gift, and that they are to be embraced and they are to be enjoyed at the proper times in life. They are. But just a side note that is helpful here, these emotions that are to be expressed by us and embraced as God's gift to deal with life in a fallen world, because that's what they are not to be trusted and they are not to be depended upon. We are not to live life in response to every changing emotion or feeling that we may have. And yet we do this so often. As these emotions, they charge us and they cause us to want to go and to do all these different things. But we are to experience them. We are to experience them in their rightful times, in their rightful place. But we are not to be ruled by them, friends. You live life according to your emotions, you are going to be a mess. And this is where we often find ourselves. And when we do this, we inevitably begin viewing life in a pessimistic way, in an unbiblical way. Our emotions, they will never fulfill us. They will never satisfy us. Only God can do that. This is why we are to operate according to truth. Truth which is absolute and eternal, not emotions which are subjective and fleeting. Don't operate your life by those things. Enjoy them. Embrace them. Embrace the difficult ones. Enjoy the good ones. But don't operate your life according to them. We want to operate our lives according to that which is eternal and absolute, not that which is subjective and fleeting. Fourth, this poem describes for us in verses 5 through 8 that God is sovereign over all human relationships. God is sovereign over all human relationships. A time to throw stones and a time to gather stones, a time to embrace and a time to shun embracing, a time to search and a time to give up as lost, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear apart, a time to sew together, a time to be silent, a time to speak, a time to love, a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. There are all kinds of different human relationships that one has on this planet. Friends, enemies, spouses, children, employers, employees, you get the point. All kinds of different relationships. And it is important to understand that God's providence presides over each and every relationship that you have in your life, and He oversees them for His purposes and for His glory. You know what that means? That means those difficult relationships that you have in your life right now that you're struggling with, those difficult relationships that I have in my life that I'm struggling with, that God has placed them there. That there's an appointed time for them. And it's now. And not only has it been appointed by God for them to be in my life right now, but God is sovereignly ruling over those relationships. And He's using those difficult relationships that we're going through right now to conform you and to conform me more to the image of Jesus Christ. You see, there is an appointed time for all of the relationships you have in your life. So seek to glorify God in all of your relationships, pleasant or unpleasant. And those take different looks. Those relationships, those difficult ones that are difficult to manage, and there's different caveats to each of these things. There's different things that are going on. But the fact of the matter is, and this is what you can't lose sight of, is that God is sovereign over every one of those, and He has appointed them to your life. And so figure out how to deal with them biblically. Again, verse 5 here is difficult to interpret. But it seems to be referencing the ruining an enemy's field by filling it with rocks. This is something that they did back in those times, at times of war. And there was a time to do that. There was a time to deal with your enemies in that way. And then it says that there was a time to gather stones, possibly to build a house or a tower or a vineyard. So sometimes you deal with enemies, and sometimes you deal with friends. You have easy relationships and you have difficult relationships. This is all part of living life under the control of a sovereign God in a fallen world. And there are different ways to handle those different relationships. And in those relationships, he goes on to say that there is a time to embrace and there is a time to refrain from embracing. So that there is a time to search for things. The other night, sitting in my chair. It's what I like to do later at night. And my wife comes down and she says, "Where are my glasses?" "I don't know. I don't touch your glasses." And she's like, "They're not where I put them." And I said, "Well, we have 7 kids. Put them on the hunt. First of all, go question each and every one of them. See what they did with your glasses." So all the ones who were awake at that time denied having anything to do with it. And we were pretty sure that they didn't. My 16-year-old daughter going and stealing her mom's glasses, I don't think that's going to happen. So we all had our suspicions as to who was behind the missing glasses. I won't tell you her name, but she answers to Courtney. But she was asleep. And you don't wake a sleeping child. Friends, don't wake a sleeping child ever. Because then she'll be up for the rest of the night and she will invade your life. But she was sleeping, and so we thought, where are her hiding places? And she has many. I mean, something goes missing. She has stuff stashed everywhere in that house. And it's a pretty new house. We couldn't find them, all the different places, so eventually we just gave up searching. That's what Solomon says happens. Sometimes you search, sometimes you give up the search. And so we gave up the search, and my wife walked around blind. Good news is, next morning, I'm getting ready there in the bathroom, and here comes Courtney leading her mother by the hand into our closet, manages to pull out this bucket, and behind them, there are the glasses. But they're not in the shape that you would hope glasses would be in, right? Right, there's glasses. Some of you have spectacles, and they're on your eyes right now. You understand how they're supposed to fit. And so these had the lenses like this, and they started to go up, but then they grew wings, and they went like this. She had bent those, whatever those are, that way. Not good. So we initially found what we were searching for. That's great. But there's a time to search, and there's a time to give up the search. There's a time to keep things, memorable things, valuable things, things that help are helpful, things that you need. And then the part of the verse that most plagues hoarders, there is a time to throw things away. Listen, we have biblical precedent here, folks. I can't believe I see hoarding happen and I think, oh, sweet mercy, how do you deal with that? But we have biblical precedent right here, a time to throw away. Keep that in mind as you get older and gain a lot of stuff. Solomon expresses in verse 7 that there's a time to tear apart. He's referencing here tearing his clothes in mourning or grief or over some relationship. And then there's a time to sew it back together when it's time to move on from the difficulty. He's telling us this because there are difficult relationships in life in a fallen world, and they must be dealt with and handled and lived with. After you grieve over something, after you deal with something difficult, some difficult relationship in your life, there is a time to move on. He's telling us we don't dwell on things. There's a time to deal with it, and there's a time to move on from it. Certainly, as the second half of verse 7 states, there is a time to be silent and a time to speak within the context of every relationship. Proverbs tells us that a fool speaks without thinking and he runs his mouth at the wrong times, but a wise word is aptly spoken. Sometimes the wisest thing that you can do in this life is shut your mouth and keep it shut. And the sooner all of us learn that, the better. There is a time for that. And so many issues of life that eventually come up in your midst that you have to deal with are because you or somebody connected with you failed to shut their mouth and keep it shut. There is a time to be silent. And then sometimes the wisest thing you can do is speak truth into a relationship. Often the line between speaking and not speaking is blurred in the midst of a tumultuous situation, which Solomon had a lot of in his life. And you know those situations in your life. You know those times. You can think of times right now. Yep, should have kept my mouth shut. I think about that on a regular basis. Yeah. Come home, complain about something. Nope, shouldn't have done that. My wife's had it a lot harder than I had it, sitting in my nice office and drinking coffee. There are times to keep your mouth shut and there are times to speak. There are times when you're in that situation and that person comes to you and is talking to you and needs advice and needs you to say something biblical, needs you to say something godly. And that moment, that's the time to speak. That's when you need to insert what is true. There's a time to love, verse 8, a time to hate. This is probably coupled with the last merism. There is a time for war and a time for peace. It probably all goes together. Often relationships in life cause there to be at times responses of love and at times responses of hate. As believers, we are to love the things that God loves and we are to hate the things that God hates. There's a time for all of that. In Solomon's life, verse 8, could possibly be referencing the actions of nations, war and peace, and it's probably right. He is telling us that there are times in this life that war is inevitable and actually that war is good, as in Old Testament times, and there are other times in life when that are meant for peace. It's just a part of living life in a fallen world. It's just how it goes. Again, as I mentioned at the outset, this poem is given by Solomon for the purpose of making factual declarations of what life is like in a fallen world under God's sovereign control. All of these kinds of scenarios listed there in verses 2 through 8 are a part of our lives on a regular basis. And what we need to grasp is that they are all a part of our lives because God has appointed them as, because God has ordained them as appointed times to bring to fruition His sovereign plan and to bring about the good of His children. That's what we need to understand. When thinking about these, all of these different aspects of life, I love how Warren Wiersbe puts it in his commentary on this text. He says, life is something like a doctor's prescription. Taken alone, the ingredients might kill you, but properly blended, they bring healing. God is sovereignly in control and has a time and a purpose for everything. This is not fatalism, and there's a lot of people who go to this text and preach fatalism. This is not fatalism, nor does it rob us of freedom or responsibility. It is the wise providence of a loving Father who does all things well and promises to make everything work for good. That's how you have to view life. Well, after having thought about the different aspects of life and portraying them in a poem, Solomon uses a second avenue to convey his point of enjoying life by submitting to the plan of a sovereign God by asking, number two, a discerning question. A discerning question, which we see in verse 9. This is the same question that Solomon asks at the beginning of chapter 1. What profit is there for the worker who toils away in this life? What profit is there? After examining all of these different aspects of life under heaven, Solomon asks basically, what's the point? What's the point? Lord, you've just declared that this is all there is. This is how life goes and comes and it goes. Every place has its appointed time. What's the point? We toil in this life from birth until death, dealing with the pains of working, dealing with struggling relationships, dealing with fleeting and sometimes even wild emotions. What is the gain? What is the profit from all of this, Solomon says? What am I going to get to take with me from all of this toil when I go to the grave? Why do all of this stuff in life, Solomon asks? Why go through it? Well, Solomon is going to answer this for us next time when we are together on Wednesday. So I'm going to leave you hanging there with that question. But I want to leave you with a few lessons from the first half of this text that we looked at today. First lesson we learn is that God's sovereignty over the affairs of this life is comprehensive. God's sovereignty over the affairs of this life is comprehensive. There is not one rogue molecule outside of the sovereign control of God. It is absolutely comprehensive. The second lesson that we learn is that God's sovereignty over your life should bring you great comfort as you deal with the issues of life in a fallen world. You're going to have problems. Hopefully that's not a wake-up call to you. I mean, hopefully you realize that. That because you live in a world that has fallen, you're going to have problems. I'm going to have problems. We're all going to have problems. There's going to be issues. But the most comforting doctrine that you can rely on in the midst of this life, in the midst of all of the issues and the toils and the pains and all of that stuff, is that God is sovereignly working out his plan over all the details, and that he is a good and gracious God who loves you immensely. It should bring you great comfort. It should indeed, as Spurgeon said, be the pillow on which you lie your head at night. Because don't lose sight of that. We preach it. We preach it. I harp on it. I know that. I know that. But that's because if I didn't think about it as often as I do, my life would be a complete disaster. God is sovereign, and he is good. Third lesson we take away from these first few verses is that life is complex. Therefore, enjoy the diversity of the moments you experience. Life is complex. Enjoy the diversity of the moments you experience. Your emotions that go up and down, and you dealing with all the different aspects of life that you have to deal with, all the joys, all the difficulties, understand, guys, all of that is a gift from God to enjoy life that he has given you on this planet. Don't focus on the complexity of life. Don't get caught up in the complex nature of things. Set your focus on the God who is in charge of that complexity. And experience the things that he's given you to experience for his glory and for your good. Fourth lesson we learn is that every relationship you experience has been ordained by God. Every relationship that you experience, that you encounter, that you have, has been ordained by God. So try and figure out how to operate biblically in those relationships. That's your responsibility. It's not to determine or ask God why, or wallow in, God, why is this person in my life? Why did you give me the parents that you gave me? Why did you give me the kids that you gave me? Why did you give me these people, my employer, my teachers, whoever? Why did you give me these people? That's not our responsibility. God is in charge. God is sovereign. God is good. God ordained it. God planned it. God put them there. Our responsibility is, okay, so I've been given a difficult relationship in my life, and I'm probably part of that difficulty. How do I manage it biblically? How do I live in a way that pleases God? Final lesson we take away from these verses is because God is sovereign and he is good, life, even with all of its tumultuous issues, is worth living and can be enjoyed. Because God is sovereign and he is good, life, even with all of its tumultuous issues, is worth living and can be enjoyed. Don't lose sight of that. You go from here, you enjoy worshiping with God's people. You leave this place this afternoon, you enjoy riding home with your friends or your family. You enjoy this afternoon. You enjoy serving in Awana or coming back for worship tonight or whatever you're doing tonight. You do this because God is sovereign and he is good. And we'll get to on Wednesday one other caveat that fits into that. Let's pray together. Father, thank you for your goodness and your faithfulness. Thank you for this book. Lord, it's like I can't read a verse out of the book of Ecclesiastes and not identify with it in some way. And I hope that's true for these students as well. We're getting down to the nitty-gritty of life. We are contemplating the matters of life and death on a weekly basis at this point. That is in your providential plan for us, God. Help us not to allow it to go in one ear and out the other. Help us to contemplate and chew on the difficult things that are here. Because you have ordained them. You have appointed them. You want us to think deeply about life. You do not want us to sit on the sidelines or to look at the surface things and make declarations concerning that. You want us to look at the deep things and to know the ins and outs of things. You want us to look at you. You want us to focus on you. And you give us these things ultimately to draw our focus, our attention, and our affection to you through your Son, the Lord Jesus Christ. So, Father, do that work in us. Thank you that you are sovereignly in control of all things, and we entrust ourselves to you. In Christ's name, amen.